Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Shrimp and Savrette Show, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Shrimpy, welcome back. I see you're still in upstate New York. Happy birthday. Happy Canada Day as well. Tell me a little bit about what happened for your birthday or also Canada Day.
Yeah, so as I like to refer to that from your guys' side of it, the Rob Shrimp Day. I kind of stole your holiday in 1986. It was a great weekend, actually. Is one of the big reasons I came home was, besides seeing family, was my buddy was getting married over the weekend. So I was the best man at that wedding. So we had Friday was my birthday, and we went for a birthday / pre-wedding round of golf. And then Saturday we had the rehearsal dinner, and then Sunday we had the wedding, and then Monday we had the 4th of July. So it's been a lot of celebrating over these last 4 or 5 days. It's nice to come back to be a human and relax a little bit and get more of a routine, but it was a lot of fun. It was great to see some, a lot of the people at the wedding were people that we grew up with. My buddy was getting married, Tyler Zinsmeyer. We grew up playing from like 8 years old till 12 years old. We're on the same teams. We traveled like everywhere together. It was such a tight click. So it was really awesome to see a lot of those people again, the Kozalas, a bunch of families, the Haneys, were all there. So our parents were, thick as thieves growing up, and we were as kids as well. So it was a great weekend. It was great to be back home for my birthday, my family and friends. And it was awesome. It was a great weekend. It's something I've missed for a long time. Obviously being on the road since I was 15, I've only been home for, it's hard to date myself. It's 20 years of travel, and I've been home for probably 3 birthdays since then. So it's pretty cool to get back and then also have it wrapped around that buddy's wedding and being the best man at it and celebrate their marriage. It was really cool. So great weekend for me. How about yourself? What have you been up to? I know there's some big news for today. We should get out there and have our listeners here. I want you to walk us through it every minute, every second of the shot.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately a day I'll remember. It was obviously the draft day in 2022, but, I just had a round set up with, Drew Doughty and, actually Corey Perry was supposed to play as well as my father-in-law, but, he couldn't make it. And Corey, is still sort of resting, some of the injuries. So, it was just Drew and I. We just walked the course. So we played the Lennon Hunt Club at, I think we teed off at like 7:45. I think we were the second or third group off. Just walked it. We zipped through in about 3 hours. But the eighth hole, ironically enough, Drew Doughty wears number 8. So we walked up to it. You've played it. It's a little island green sort of. You got to hit over some waste area. Big oversized green, double tiered. The pin was at the front. And it's a massive green, so it can be an 80 yard shot or it can be a 150 yard shot. It's absurdly large. So the pin was at the front and it was just 99 yards. So, which is a tough little shot because there's a bunker just on the far side of the hole. So anything long, you're in a bunker, you're hitting back to pretty much over the green into a wasteland. So the safe play is just to sort of hit to the fat part of the green and which is sloped. And I was just like, I'm just going to hit this on, make my par and get out of here type thing. So I hit the ball in the air. Drew was like, wow, this could go in, which I'd hardly ever get it close to the hole. So that I'm like, yeah, good thinking.
Good one, buddy.
So I ended up, it landed, I don't know, maybe like 6 feet past the hole to the left and just sort of trickled down. Like the greens were rolling pretty good. So it just sort of like dramatically played out that it just kept going and going and going and until it ended up disappearing. So My first one. He was sort of getting mad at me because he celebrated hard. He's a pretty emotional guy, right? Like, he was hooting and hollering and cheering, and I'm sort of just, you know, happy to be there. But Drew ended up hitting it on, made his par as well. So we zipped through the hole pretty quickly, but yeah, it was my first hole in one. It was good to be with obviously a friend in Drew at my home course and, on draft day. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Been looking for it for a long time. I think the closest I've got is maybe a foot, but, finally it found the bottom of the hole. So I was fortunate for that. We have insurance at our course. So, I think every member pays into it. So I didn't have to foot the bill for the entire tab. But, everyone is pretty happy. Everyone is pretty happy in the morning to get a cocktail or two for free. So
welcome to the club, buddy. That's awesome.
I indulged a little bit, but I knew we had to get it back on the podcast. So here we are talking hockey again. But yeah, you have a couple, right?
Yeah, I've got three.
Oh, wow.
I had a sick one with my old billet, Tim Harrison.
Oh, yes. This is a good one.
So we're playing with my billet brother, Brett, and my wife now was with us just in the cart rolling around with us. And Tim, Brett and I were playing, and we got up to, I'm not sure, I think it was 11th hole out in Dorchester golf course. And it's a blind shot, like a huge mound in front of the green. It's one of those greens where the flag's massive, like huge. So you can see where the flag is. Can't see the green at all. Tim started telling me like how you should shape it, how you should play it. And he walks up and he hits it just how he said to play it, and it looked nice. And so then it was my turn, and I went and I hit, and I'm a lefty, he's a righty, I'm a lefty. So as a lefty, I shaped it the other way of what he explained, because obviously different side of the ball. And I hit it, and I thought I heard a clink, and I look over, and Brett and Tim were walking back to the last green because Brett forgot his club. So I didn't want to say anything. I was like, whatever, it probably was nothing. So we walk up to the green, we're walking, looking around for like, you know, we drive up to the green, there's no ball. So we both grab wedges. We started walking around, looking around the green, looking all over the place, looking long, looking short. And then we look in the hole. Both of us made a hole in one in the same hole at the same time. So it was wild. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And to do it with him, he's someone I look up to, and he was great to me, and awesome billet family. And Brett's an awesome kid. He actually got drafted last year, I believe it was, into Boston in the third round. So pretty cool story, and something, you know, we could share that for the rest of our lives. And great. Yeah. Golf is awesome. What a game.
Oh, that's cool. And to do it with your billet too. Like, I know billets are a huge part of hockey players growing up, right? Like, I was fortunate. I had a younger couple in Murray and Steph Saunders in North London. And the Murray was a fireman and Steph was a school teacher. I had a nice Victorian house. I was pretty much had my own apartment. I had the third floor to myself and
hot tub.
Yeah, you remember, I had a pretty good setup, and you know, I still to this day, they're a couple kilometers down the road from me, and I still keep in contact with them. But obviously a big part of your growth and maturity as a player when, you know, you move away from home at the age of, you know, some 16, 15 years old, and you're planted into a new home that, you know, have rules and different than your parents. And, you know, they made it very accommodating for me. And I know you had a couple billets that were really good for you as well. So yeah, no, just that's cool to be able to share that with your billet dad. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. We had a blast. We had a good time. So today's a special day. We got the future of the NHL coming in. Draft day 2022. What do you like, and do you have any opinion on, you know, there's a lot of banter going back and forth about who will go number one and who will pick, you know. Is it going to be right? Is it going to be Slovakian kid, Slavkovsky? Would you have an opinion on that? Or what do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, Wright was an exceptional status player in the OHL. I think he was fifth this year in the league in scoring, captain of the team. I think his maturity is there's a lot of comparisons to him and sort of a Patrice Bergeron, who is my age and has played in the league since he was 18 years old. And a dominant player every single year he plays both sides of the ice. So I would probably lean a little bit more that way if hopefully Wright can turn out to be like a Bergeron. But I do, in saying that, I do like what I saw with the Slovakian player in the World Juniors and the Olympics, right? Like he lit it up. So big game, big stage player. I don't know. It's hard to it's hard to say what Montreal would do. I think if you build your roster through the middle of the ice, like you have Suzuki as a centerman, and then you come back with potentially a right for a long number of years, like that foundation, I think is going to be pretty strong, right? When you have guys that can play the middle of the ice very well, I think that's an added element. The only thing I didn't really like, and I don't know if it's just being young, or maybe it was I don't want to say it's a misquote because it was a quote, but when they did ask Shane Wright about, you know, where he thinks he could play, I guess it's a loaded question. He sort of came back with, I think it was the amount of work and time and effort he's put in. And I have heard that he's a machine workhorse. Like he's just addicted to hockey, works out all the time. His MO is hockey, like eat, sleeps and breathes it. Right. But when he responded with, you know, like I deserve to be first overall, like no one really, you can't really say that. Like, I know if we can rewind the clock and if Rob Schrempf said that in 2003, like people's heads would fall off. Right. Yeah. Or 2000 and whenever we drafted 2001
four, or 2004.
But you know what I mean? Like I was just like, I don't, is the new thing now to be ultra confident? Like you were ultra confident, but everyone said you were cocky. Right. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, and now it's switched to, oh yeah, this guy just like spews confidence. Well,
love it. Yeah. That's amazing. You know, there's one story. I think it was Clayton Keller walked into a meeting and said, you know, if you don't take me, you're basically passing up on the next Patrick Kane. It's somewhere in those lines. It's not, I'm probably maybe butchering the quote a little bit, but it's in that ballpark. That's where his confidence level was at. And his statement to a team in a draft meeting was that if I am the next Patrick Kane. And like, to your point, you were saying that I saw the same thing and I thought the same thing, you know, the interview was going well. And then all of a sudden he dropped the, I deserve to be, it's kind of like, that's a little bit entitled. Like I've earned it. Maybe, I don't know, the words probably came out wrong, but it seemed like a pretty nice teed up interview, you know, kind of well-trained in the media, so to speak, and to drop that, I didn't like it.
It could have just been a bad, yeah. Like, and I don't think he would, I don't know the player personally, so I'm sort of speaking vaguely, but to be, nominated to be a captain at his age, for his team that did very well this year, a good player. I wouldn't say that it's maybe the way he is. I just, it sort of threw me off when it, like you said, I was, you know, it was a great interview. And then that happened. And obviously we have lots of time to overanalyze it. It's a split second. He just said a word or a line. I just found that interesting. And I immediately thought of sort of you, right? Cause I'm like, everyone's like, oh, Rob Schrempf, you know, so cocky. Well, Rob Schrempf was confident. Now everyone that has confidence is thought of, and confidence and skill are thought of being like the, you know, what's like, I know a guy that, you know, that was his knock. It was like his, he's too skilled or whatever. And too confident with it. It's like, or cocky or whatever. It's like, just interesting to me how the shifting goes. What's your, I mean, I know you've done you've seen the European players quite often. What's your take on who you think will go first overall?
I don't know if it's more about like who's gonna, it's more like who would I, you know, if I was taking it, and just knowing the European style game and Slavkovsky, apologize if I'm butchering that name, Slavkovsky. I like it, like that Liga, the Finnish Liga. It's a man's game. It's a very physical game. It's a very tough game. So having that experience already is huge. And
they play very structured there too, right?
Very structured. He's got great habits in his game already as a young winger. You know, he stays close to the puck. He doesn't cheat. He doesn't fly around the neutral zone. He stays back and waits for the play to come up with him. Very responsible in the offensive zone as an F3 and finding the quiet areas, not cheating and not jumping in when he's not supposed to. So he's got some great tangibles, great habits already to his game. And that's instilled. I think, again, what I would do, not to say what's going to happen, is that I like that about him. He's a big kid. He can play, he can skate. He's got good hands. He puck protects really well and he's doing it against men. So for me, if I was in that position, it'd be hard for me as a general manager with the number one overpick to take a kid that's in the junior ranks. You know, yeah, it was an exceptional player, but We both played in the league in the OHL. You get to a certain point, he's played there four leagues. It's a little bit stagnant and you're playing with boys versus he's playing against men. Big difference in where they are as far as today. Now, as far as future and where they're going to develop, that's always a crapshoot. You're never going to know that. But as it sits today, where Slavkovsky played last year compared to Wright, I would be kind of leaning towards that kid that's played the men's league already and would be able to come in and handle himself against bigger, stronger players. And also the thing is too, with that is, for Wright, he's had 4 years of being dominant and lighting it up. You never know how he's going to handle those setbacks. You're not always going to light it up. You're not always going to tear it up. There's going to be sometimes maybe some downtimes. And for Slavkovsky, like he didn't have that's not like a 100-point season, right? Like you don't go over to the Finnish league and tear it up. It's like a half a point a season as an 18-year-old is a big year, like really big. So I think handling those, not being such a point producer, so to speak, might be easier for him mentally. Those are just some fine things that I think about when it comes to the two different players, where they're playing, where they're coming from. It's a little bit different, you know?
Do you think now, like, let's like put your GM hat on a little bit. If you're thinking that, and Montreal, obviously the draft is in Montreal, there's a huge buzz. You maybe want to try to make a splash. How much do you want to stick your neck out and try to go get the first and second overall pick? If it's available, I've heard it's being tossed around that it's, we're listening, but like how hard do you go at that thinking I can grab two really good players, very, very good players. And my nucleus is sort of young as is, right? Or is that
I don't know if they have the pieces really, to be honest with you, to go after that. What would you give up? And I don't know if these are two, we're talking about two very good hockey players for sure, but I don't think, in my opinion, and I might eat these words someday, but I'll say them out loud. I don't think they're two generational players. The one, two, like getting the Sedin twins, those are generational players. They were huge for Vancouver for many, many years. I don't know. And they changed the game a little bit, not this major impact like a Crosby did or, that sort of thing. But I don't know if these are two generational players that you'd want to give up the farm for, or what would that, what would go in a trade there? Like what pieces do they have? Would you give up an Anderson and who, I don't know what's there to give up, but I don't know if I think that would be risking a little bit. Again, these are two very good hockey players, but I don't think they're going to have that massive of an impact to go ahead and sell everything.
Yeah. I just was curious to see your thought process on it. Cause like, I think you have a good coach in Marty St. Louis there. I think what Montreal's doing is looking like trending up. You have a guy that's going to be very strong work habits with his young players. I was just curious what can you get, or what would you have to give up to get potentially one, two, right? But no, I mean, I love your analysis. I'm actually interested in not so much the first and second overall pick or third. In the middle rounds, there's a kid from Michigan. He's a 2004 birth. And when I coached, I coached the Elgin Middlesex Chiefs. Currently right now, I coach the London Junior Knights. But at the time, we were in a tournament and we played Honey Baked, who obviously has a good team always. And there was this kid, Frank Nazar, that he was a centerman, right shot centerman. I think he maybe played a wing a little bit, like smooth, good decision-making, poise with the puck. He'll be a middle round pick, I think, or maybe late first rounder. But our buddies in London, the London Knights drafted him. And so he's committed to Michigan. And it will be interesting to see what happens after he does get selected, right? Like now you have to think of how much pressure does a GM or an ownership group put on a player to, no NHL team is going to tell a player where to go, right? But the college route, you're waiting a couple more years to get there. And yes, you are playing against older players, so you're going to mature fairly quickly. You play less games. How much is it like, well, maybe you can go to London, which is arguably one of the best CHL teams or spots to be with the media pressure, fan pressure, constant
pretty good turnouts in the standings. And can like, did the Knights steal someone? I think they drafted him in like the fourth or fifth round in the OHL, but he had made it clear that he wasn't going to come. Yeah, and it was sort of like, okay, we'll see, sort of thing, right? Like it'll be interesting to see if the gamble paid off for the Knights, to see where he goes and what his sort of path is. You know, if the team sort of wants you to get to the NHL quicker, I think you would maybe lean a little bit more towards the CHL, just because it takes a little bit longer to get into the NCAA. But I mean, I'm sort of speaking without huge knowledge on that, but I do know that the US game is obviously greater. I know you were going to touch on the US program and what it sort of, how it's changed since you've played, but that's a player that I'm interested to see, just for someone who lives in London, to see where he ends up and sort of what his career path is. Like, I know he's committed to Michigan and maybe he will go there, but how much pressure do you think a player like that will get from the NHL team to maybe want to play more games and be under the microscope a little bit more, media stuff? You know, be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's very interesting from the U.S. National Development Team program. I mean, they're doing great stuff there with the development of the players on ice, off ice. It's swung around a lot. And the same thing when they go to university, they're really getting a ton of off ice work. You know, it's obviously less workload as far as games. That piece of off ice, you know, developing as a young man and getting that frame, getting your body set up and the workout habits and basically building your body up to a place where you can go against men, be strong enough to play against men. You know, it's tricky. It depends on, I don't know the situation that well with this player. I don't know him that well. I know he's ranked around the 20th pick, around 21st pick in a lot of mock drafts. But that being said, like, Michigan had five first rounders on their team last year, you know, like stacked. Owen Powers stayed for another year to try to win. We touched on that, I think, in one of our earlier podcasts about how hard it is to win. And even with a stacked team and a stacked everything, stacked goalie, stacked D, stacked forwards, you don't always win. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where that goes, because I feel like there's a big shift in balance in the game right now. It used to be like that, where the mindset was to, well, if you want to get ready for pro quick, you go to the OHL. You know, I know that definitely was my thought process. And a lot of people asked, did you ever think about college? And for me personally, it was no, because I got pretty advanced at 14, 15 years old. So I would have had to stay at the junior level, not OHL, like either USHL or North American Hockey League, or stay in the Ontario Provincial League, one of those three junior leagues, for four more years, roughly, or three more years. And it just didn't make sense. So I want to advance and go to the NHL. But now it seems to be where there's bigger balance there. Like, players are going 1 or 2 years to college. They get to, you know, they get drafted, then 1 or 2 years of college at 20, they're ready to go, ready to kind of, again, build up on their body a little bit more. So it's interesting to see what will shake out, but I don't know that the mentality has changed, definitely, where a lot more kids are coming out of college to the show. I think, you know, mm-hmm. especially from our time, it really was, I felt like more major junior heavy. Yeah. And more major junior, the scouts and the team managements were really putting pressure on, like, hey, if you want to play, mm-hmm. you're going here, you know, and you kind of had a decision to make. It's tough to make that decision if you're in that seat, you know, your NHL team's telling you what to do to push back against. That's really tough, but yeah, that'll be interesting. So, but I feel like seeing the draft and seeing, again, a lot of the mock drafts, a lot of the, you know, the focus and seeing how many players the NTDP has lined up in the first round. Last year was a big year for them. Again, this year, they've really done a great job, because it used to be a model where it was more geared towards getting kids into college and Division I scholarships. And now it's really seemed to, again, balance out on the opposite side, where they're developing both. They're developing really high level 17, 18 year old kids coming into the draft that are getting those Division I scholarships and then going into the NHL and doing very well. So it's good for me as American to see that shift. And that was one of the reasons, to be honest, when I didn't go there at 15, 16 years old or 15 years old, that was the reason. It was more like, we're going to play four lines and there's not really a power play. It's more like, who's up next goes on the power play. And that didn't, in my opinion, didn't fit me well. You know, I was trying to take my game to the next level, and having that modeled didn't fit for us, you know, and that's why we decided to stay here and play Ontario Provincial Junior instead of go to the US program. Great setup, but like that part of it, I wanted to, you know, sort of develop and advance at that high level type of player position and it was more geared towards, again, spreading everything out equally. So it seems to change a little bit now, and there's some studs coming out of there, and it's great to see. It's great for USA Hockey. Happy to see it and start to get some numbers up there where I can start chirping with you Canadian boys, because that's what all you got, you know, the draft and all your NHL guys, and now we're starting to come kicking, boys.
Yeah, I think the growth of the league throughout the U.S. has sort of built that, right? You're seeing players coming from Florida and California and Arizona, like places that, like when you were growing up, you're like, if we play a team from Florida, you're getting 8 goals, you know?
Yeah. So
they've done a really good job of that. And yeah, there are, like, I think that's where, when World Juniors now is, you know, I think, as sad as it is, like, I think, I don't want to say sad as a Canadian, but I think the U.S. has, you know, sort of the upper hand when you get to the World Juniors, because there's just so many young players playing in the U.S. now, right? But I have a couple kids that are in this area that I coach and skate with us in the summer that are up for the draft. I don't know if one will squeak into the first round or not, but I'm hoping that they get an opportunity to get selected. And I guess just the process of being selected, I know for me, I was passed over in two drafts. I'm a year older than you. I was passed over in two drafts. And then we won the World Cup. I won the World Juniors and then the CHL Defense in the year. And our draft was on
not
the internet.
Not a big deal.
Yeah. And our draft was on the internet. And I'm like, it sounds stupid, but for a kid that's wanting to get drafted all the time, I was passed up 2 years. I'm thinking, okay, opportunity. It would maybe be better if I didn't get drafted, because then I can sort of, I'm sort of the free agent on the market type thing as a CHL defenseman of the year. But I was selected by Edmonton, and I found out by clicking refresh on my computer because we had an internet draft. So my draft experience wasn't as good as I know the players that will be having it tonight in Montreal. But just wanted to hear about your scenario with your family and the buildup for the draft and sort of how that plays out for everyone that isn't drafted and doesn't get to go on state. Like, how is that as a player, and what all goes on after?
Yeah, it was intense. My draft was in North Carolina, Carolina Hurricanes Arena in 2004. And it was crazy. Like, I had 125 people came down to the draft, whether through friends and family. So it was a big ball of energy and a big buildup. And, you know, I think the NHL had me mic'd up and not a camera on me. I was, you know, kind of projecting the top 10. So they had the cameras going and kind of focusing in on me. So it was crazy, because we had basically had a whole section of people that came with us. And it was great though, you know, cause that was such a buildup over years of anticipation, obviously playing youth hockey with a lot of these people and their kids. So there was always all that talk about me making it to the NHL. So that became the day for the draft and the moment that it was going to come true, so to speak. So everybody came down and it was electric. You know, it was just anticipation, waiting to see where you're going to get drafted, sitting, waiting. You know, it was a lot of emotions for me personally, like that, again, being projected top 10, and then I sort of slipped. So I can't, you know, if I did like the typical give the politically correct answer kind of talk right now, like I was, oh, it was groovy and great. But to be honest with you, it was like nerve wracking and crazy, because a lot of the draft meetings after 10th pick were, in the meetings, they were like, you're not going to come, you're not going to be at our pick. So I don't know why we're talking to you, but if you are, we'd love to have you. So from 10th pick on, every time a pick came up, I was like, so you got like 22nd, 23rd pick. It was like, I was just kind of a little bit frustrated, a little bit like, what's going on? You know, you start to wonder like what happened? What did I do in my meetings? Like, did I screw something up? Like, man, all these people are here. Like, I'm disappointing people. I'm disappointed. Like, this sucks. And then, boom, name gets called. So it was a ton of emotions. And then my name got called, like all 125 people were, you know, clapping and everything. So it was a lot of emotion in a, you know, about an hour's worth of time. So, yeah. And then afterwards you go up to the stage, you meet the staff, and, for some reason the coach wasn't up for my draft pitcher. I was a first round draft pick and I didn't get a pitcher there with him on stage. And then we go up and meet up the people in the booth, upstairs in a box. Every team has their own suite, and you're going to go up there and mingle and have some hors d'oeuvres and get to know the team and take a draft pitcher and the jersey and all that good stuff. So, it's a wild couple of hours, to be honest with you. It really is, because it's like years of work and build up and anticipation, and it comes into a couple hours of that. So it was unique, and obviously something I'll remember forever. And I did have like a quote at the end when I walked off the stage to get the mic right in my face. As soon as I like literally stepped off the stage, and then like boom, Mike, like, hey, so Rob, what do you think about falling to number 25 overall? And I was like, well, I guess I got 24 teams to prove wrong. And then that was like a statement. And I was like, when I ended up getting to team that drafted me in Edmonton, and that was like kind of getting chirped because I said that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't know, just to your point earlier to play off of, but I never understood it because I believed in myself and didn't have a problem saying what I thought. That sometimes backfired for me, maybe a little more filter, but I am who I am. I always have been who I am. So that statement was not anything to say that I'm better than anybody else. It was more of a statement of like 24 teams passed. Well, actually technically 23, because Edmonton had two picks in the first 25, but 23 teams to prove wrong. And that was my, immediate thought. So I said it, and got chirped for it after.
The shift in arrogance to confidence is interesting now. And I know just from talking to Drew today when we were playing, I sort of asked him his process, right? Because his was in Ottawa. And he knew he wasn't going to go first overall, but he was either going to LA LA or Atlanta as two or three. So I just sort of asked him his process, and a player drafted obviously that high, they get scooped away, right? He's like, I don't even remember what. I was like, well, you would have for sure went around and shook everyone's hand around the. And he's like, I don't even remember. And then I'm like, what do you? But he said afterwards, he said, as soon as you get off, you're like, you're shuttled through media and interviews, and then you're doing pictures. And he said, you're like, for about an hour, you're doing things where you just want to like celebrate with your family or grab your phone and like, So, but it was interesting to hear his. He was obviously a highly touted guy and knew he wasn't going one, but didn't know if he was going to go two or three. So, it'll be interesting to see where some of these players go. But I know for me, and I know from coaching young players, they're still young individuals. Like they're still boys, right? And sometimes I think we forget that as media, as management, these are still boys. As much as they're going to hopefully turn out to be these men that you watch on TV and their faces are on billboards and everything, they're still boys at the time, right? And I wonder how much I didn't go through a combine, and I know you would have, so you'll have to explain your experience there. But I only had one interview with a team, and then we went to the hotel and they did a bunch of players, and I walk into this boardroom, the conference room, and there's like one table in the middle with two individuals sitting at it. And like, it seems like the longest walk to get to this table where I'm like, holy cow, like it was probably 30 feet, but felt like 8 kilometers. Right. then in this meeting, I introduced myself and they introduced themselves, and then they asked like three point blank questions. One was, are you independent or dependent player? Right. For me, I was a fairly puck moving, puck friendly defenseman, and I could sort of play with another puck moving D or a big stay at home D. So I was like, I would be an independent player. Like, I don't rely on someone to give me the puck. I go and get it and try to make a play with it. And, are you, what was it? Are you, who would you,
planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I don't want to spill the beans on what team it was, but the other thing that they asked me was, if I were to be in the NHL, would you be an offensive defenseman or a defensive defenseman, right? Easy for me. Offensive. Like, I'm not Chris Pronger, 6'5". And there was another question, and it was just a sort of a one-word answer. It was just a multiple choice, pretty much. And then afterwards, they're like, okay, thank you. And I was like, okay, three questions with, pick A or B for all three questions. And I tried to elaborate a little bit on it, because I'm like, I can't just go and like, yes, this one. And then I'm walking out of the room going like, did I just blow that? Or like, what are you getting out of me by asking me these questions? Like you didn't find anything about me or my character. I don't know. Maybe they did in those questions. So just like the mental warfare that sometimes I hear goes on, you would have had more experience with a bunch more teams doing it. Were there any, you don't have to say the team names, were there any like situations or questions that got extremely uncomfortable? Or, because I do know that they try to prod players into these absurd, which I don't agree with personally, but.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. You know, it's some teams, 10 people in there from the staff, set up this kind of aura in there. Like, you are like back in a corner and being interrogated almost. It's really bizarre. In my opinion, you know, that's the thing. And mine was tough. Like, I had a really tough combine. I met all 30 teams, and I had a pretty tough year the year before, the draft year. You know, I got traded to London. I asked for that trade. I got benched in playoffs in my, you know, Western Conference Finals and our series there in Guelph. So I had some things that were kind of difficult. And then when the teams were asking me through a lot of the meetings, teams would ask me what happened. And then they would be like, bullshit. What really happened? What'd you do? You're a punk. You're lying. It was like, that kind of stuff was like, oh, I felt like I was getting bullied back into a corner. And I was like, you know what I mean? And then it was really bizarre in my experience. And I remember one story specifically, like, got into the meeting, going okay. And one of the people in the staff asked me a question. I forget what the question was. I really do forget what the question was, because I got pretty heated. So he asked me the question and I started answering it, and he picks his leg up, crosses it, and then opens a newspaper like, whoosh, loudly, and starts reading. So I'm like, okay, I guess I won't talk to him, the one that asked me. I'll talk to the other 11 big bad boys that are in the room at the time and tell them the answer. And so then I get done with my answer, and then he puts the paper down, ask another question. Started answering the question, phone starts ringing, picks up the phone, answers it right in the middle of my answer. And I'm gonna carry on to the other 11 big bad boys. And then the final straw. So now I'm like rattled and confused. I'm like, this is disrespectful. Like, what's going on? This is not in my head. I'm not saying anything. I'm just trying to stay cool and calm. It's the NHL, right? Like, you dream of getting here and now you're here. And I was like, this is awkward. Like, you're like, am I blowing it? Like, this is, I'm pretty sure this guy's offsides. Like, this is unbelievably disrespectful. Third question, I remember very, very directly. So what type of player do you think you are? And I said, I'm an offensive player. I create offense. I'm very good on the power play, and I can create points for a team. Before I even got it out of my mouth, that's what I did. He's like, you think you're offensive? We got a guy that's in the same league as you. He's got 150 points. You had 75 points. You think you're offensive? And then I just kind of looked at him and I said, you know what? If you don't believe that I'm a good player and you don't think I'm an offensive player, then don't draft me. Thanks for the meeting. I'm going to go now. And I got up and walked away. I walked out the door, and I remember clear as day, I think it was Adam Pinault was standing right outside the door, and his face just looked at me, and I looked at him and I was like, I don't even know what just happened. I just like, you know what I mean? I almost blacked out, but I just got into a point of like tip over and I walked out of the room. And I don't know, maybe I'll regret that the rest of my life. I don't really regret it, but maybe it's one of those things, like you said, did I fail or did they like it? I don't know. I never know. They never got like a report card. You don't get a report card after your combine of like, hey, this meeting, this is what you did well, you know, next time try this. You just walk out of there and you'll see who drafts you. So there was a lot of that though. A lot of like, you know, your 18-year-old kid, not even, I was 17-year-old kid about to turn 18, and you know, and majority of my meetings, there's 10 much senior adults in there just like, I don't know if I agree with it or not. I mean, maybe there's a system there that they have and they understand how to crack players and they want to see the reaction. I don't know if there's an answer there, but it's pretty awkward. And I think if I could put myself in the shoes of one of them when that kid came in, I would have different ways personally of getting my answers of what kind of player it is, different kinds of questions. And it wouldn't be so much of like, let me pound this 17-year-old kid in the ground until he cracks and says something really stupid. Just my thoughts.
What do you think comes of that? Like, what are you gonna get out of, like, what are they mental warfare trying to do with flipping the newspaper up in front of your face? Like, do they expect you to grab it and throw it and say, you know, get in their face like a some sort of football movie, you know? Like, you listen to me when I'm talking.
I actually didn't know. Yeah, like I respected a lot of people who were in that room. There were some really big names in that room. I knew who they were and I understand the history of the game, so I know who some of these people are. But I'm also a human. It's like, again, when I get back in the corner, I fight. And I don't know if that's not something that was my point. If this is not, you're poking me. I, what do you want me to do? Take. Like in hockey, you can't take. You got to push back. And how I did, maybe my combine went a little bit wrong, but that's how it was. A lot of back into a corner I fought, but I think it's really bizarre. I don't know. It's, if I think back on it again, 30, so got to the one point, I got so long with this stuff, like getting just,
do you get
like,
a break? Do you get it? You said you did 30 teams. Like you're talking Rob Shrimp, 30 team tour is how long is this a whole day?
Oh yeah. And you go room to room, you know, and sometimes you wait like the top, I think it was, I want to say it's the top 40 players projected in the draft, whether European or North American were there. So you're waiting in line for some meetings. Some meetings take longer. Like Dallas did a full evaluation. I shouldn't, yeah, whatever. Dallas did a full eval. Like you went through a psychology evaluation, like look at the picture, what do you see kind of thing. Other teams were different, but you go from room to room. And I remember it got so long for me personally. I got to like the Chicago Blackhawks. They were like probably on 21st on the list of my meetings. And I came in, I sat down and one of this gentlemen and just said, hey, I like your shoes. And I had a beer with him a couple of years ago and he brought it up. And my answer was like, oh, I'm like, what's wrong with my shoes are wrong too. Like, what's wrong with my shoes? He's like, no, man, I'm just telling you, nice shoes. That's the level like I was at by 21 meetings of like berated. I just thought like, okay, everything's wrong. Like I'm just a shitty human being. Like, I guess maybe I shouldn't even go to the draft. I should just quit hockey.
Like that's the mental warfare side of things. Like when you went to the combine, like what you had to do, like did any teams do physical testing or was it just the one that the NHL does for everyone?
It was a combine. So it was a fitness testing and then you have all those meetings. So all those players come for that testing. Like Ovechkin was there. Everybody was there. Everybody in the draft was there. So you do the fitness testing and then the next day, the second day is your combine, your meetings. And in the combine and the testing is same, like you're working out in front and everybody's sitting there and taking photos. You get taking photos with like, you know, tarps off and like side angle, what your quads look like, all your, you know, basically like a meat like market.
Like you got a pig market. So like you go in front of the camera, it's just Rob Shrimp there and you're doing like a front side.
Yep.
Side.
Okay. Yep.
I didn't try. I never.
It's so awkward, man. It really is. It really is. You're just like, it's like a meat market, but I guess that's our sport. And then again, the second day you get to meet with everybody, talk, and then they have their questions for you. And so, yeah, it's interesting.
Were there any meetings? Like, I'm assuming that the newspaper guys didn't draft you, but were there any meetings?
No, they didn't.
Were there any meetings where you left being like, no, that was like not in a negative way, more of like, well, that was good.
There was four or five that were really good. And again, like I said, after 10, the meetings would be like beat up, and then they would be like, well, you're not even gonna be at our pick, but if you, you know, whatever, if you are, then we'd love to have you kind of thing. So it's like, I don't know. Some of the meetings were like that. Some were bad, like the whole way through, just, they didn't give any ground of like serious interest per se. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like questioning everything that happened the year before. And then, okay, it was nice to meet you. Good luck. And then there's other teams. There was, you know, again, like four or five teams that were like, you're not going to be at our pick. We love you. We'd love to have you, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to be here, but, you know, good luck in the draft. But so then those picks came through before 25, and then none of them took me.
Were there any like hockey questions? Like, were there any situational questions at all? Like, I'm just curious, or was it all just sort of like, you know, you lay down in the chair and like, what do you see in this picture? You know, like what yeah. Is it a psychology quiz, or do they actually want to find your hockey IQ? You know,
personally, it was all about personality and character. Nothing about hockey. Like, if you had this situation on the ice, what would you do? None of that talk. How do you see the game talk? I didn't have any of that talk, which I think personally would have boded well for me if I could have just talked hockey and not about getting benched and asking for a trade and then told I was a liar for the answers of both. You know, like that's what kind of sucked for me. It was just, they went after like pain points and then just stuck on the pain points. And then after 30 minutes, you're just like, fuck, someone just get me out of here. It's the worst thing ever. Such a pressure cooker. Again, if we could have just talked X's and O's, got a board up and talked, or even talked about like, where would you put this player in the lineup? How would this player fit in if you were coaching a team? And those kind of things, like those kind of questions, hockey IQ and understanding the game, I never got a chance to really talk about. But I think that would be,
yeah.
Like I said, if I was in that role, that's probably where I'd go with it. How do you see the game? Yeah. What do you see? Like, if this player gets to go out in this situation and you're here in this spot, supposed to blah, 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 like, how do you react? You know, how would you manage a bench? How would you set up a power play? Like, these kind of things would be picking a part out of a player more than, hey, you got shitty shoes on and you're a punk. You want to try me? Because I got my 11 buddies in the room with me.
No, I'm with you. Like, I think it, and maybe teams do it nowadays. I'm not sure. Hopefully they do. But I think it would be wise to almost show them some clips of either themselves or even just your own team. And like the NHL, the Buffalo Sabres, right? You go and meet with the Buffalo Sabres and they have a couple clips of them getting scored on or them scoring, and you watch it and say, why do you think we got scored on here? And the player has to, like, people with hockey minds can watch a clip or a game and break it down easy. Like, well, the net front coverage was a little loose, or the D didn't box out, or, you know, they allowed the point shot to go through. Like, there's going to be something hockey related that you can explain on. It'd just be interesting to see if teams actually do that now, or if maybe they're in the future, they might, just to be able to see if a player knows. Hey, hockey,
I would love, right? I'd love to be a fly on the wall for when they try to do that stuff with like Europeans. Cause the Europeans are like language barrier, and they're also very direct and they won't ramble on. So when they ask like a question, you get like a 2-word answer. It'd be really awkward for the guys trying to be the bully, so to speak, and like angle a player into speaking. They're just like, yes, no, I don't know. You know, it's like, I think it'd be funny to watch. But speaking of that, the European side of it, watching the draft now and seeing how much is in there in this first round for the mock drafts, at least when we talk a little bit about it a couple episodes ago about European development and the Swedish model development junior, you've seen a lot of these players on the first round draft selection, I guess in the mock drafts, but it's very interesting to see where a lot of these players are coming. It's not so North America dominant anymore. And, you know, it's very unique. And I think it speaks well to where the growth of the game is going. I'm not sure what walls have fallen down for that to happen. Maybe some of the samples of these, you know, big stars that are in the NHL now. Again, the Swedes are really big, but you're seeing some Czechs come up. So Slovakia player, different sort of, you know, we got Marco Kasper coming out of Austria. He's playing in Sweden for SHL team, but he's come from Austria. So I think that's exciting for the league to know that there's, you know, other countries are starting to knock on the door producing product for the league. I think that would be good overall. And maybe even when we start talking about maybe expansion, because you have a different pools now to pull from: Germany, Austria, Slovakia. You know, Sweden's been there, but it's kind of growing even more and more.
Do you think, you having played over in Europe, do you think it has to do a little bit with sometimes you'll get players from North America that have run their course in the NHL and would rather go, you know, you're getting paid a little bit more over in Europe than you would in the AHL and the minors. Do you think that having sort of older marquee former either NHL or high prospect players go play in certain countries, whether it be Slovakia, Germany, Sweden, do you think that elevates their own brand, you know? Like they're sort of bringing back what they were just learning in the NHL at, say, the age of 31. And now they're being able to be on a team with a predominantly younger European group. And you're almost like coaching from within. I know that's not the philosophy with what they're doing. They're trying to win hockey games as a club. But do you think that plays a part in it, where it's just, you know, sort of elevated or escalated their playing style or hockey knowledge?
I think it does have a big part. The imports coming over to Europe and basically bringing their information with them and the way that they play, the way they do things. And I think it's been a long time that this is happening, and you're starting to see the game balance out. You used to see the imports come over and tear it up, and now the imports are coming over and it's like a point of game, and the league is starting to evolve. A lot of leagues are evolving and developing, and a lot of great players are in there. And I think those nuggets of information, how these North American players come over and what they bring, is huge. It's, you know, because I remember even coming over to Sweden, like in the beginning, it was kind of like, you can't do that. And I was like, well, watch. And again, I'm cocky. I don't care. It's okay. Like, I'm confident because I put in the hours in this game to be good at it, very good at it, and understand the shape of it, whether it be in North America or Europe. I understand the game of hockey very well. So when they would say stuff like, you can't do that, my answer is, watch this. So you start to break down walls for them, the way that they've seen the game for such a long time, and the information that they have over, you know, from youth age and the older generation teaching them. When you bring somebody new in or a different piece of information and different solution to some problems that would happen on the ice, again, seeing it from a different perspective, that helps break down walls. It helps them see the game a different way, helps them see what is possible inside that shape, not always the same thing. I think it's huge. And I think it's filtered in through all the leagues, especially with the North American hockey, with the AHL, with the veteran rule. And a lot more North American players have had to gone to Europe to find work. So they've gotten a lot more. And it used to be top end guys, usually NHL guys and AHL guys. Now you're seeing a lot of East Coast guys even come over that are very good hockey players, just aren't going to get their chance over here, have decided to go to Europe and play. Again, they're bringing that knowledge and that information into whatever country they go to. And it's interesting to see which countries, and it's interesting to see the different ways that the countries welcome the players and welcome the information. Some teams bring the imports in. They're like, you better make us win. You know what I mean? And some places bringing these imports in, like, no, you're going to come into our system and you're going to help us learn and grow. And you're going to grow with us as well. And I think that's powerful, to combine the two, like going to Sweden to learn the way that they do things, but also bringing in a new nugget of information, a new way of playing, some new thoughts into the game. It's super powerful. So I know from my experience in the KHL, like, it wasn't like that. It was more like, you know, kind of, for lack of a better term, gun to the head, you better, you know, perform or you're out of here, instead of, what do you know? What can you help with our sort of Latvian hockey? And what kind of information can we share back and forth? It was more like, okay, you're not helping us win, you're out. So it's different in different countries, how they, you know, sort of, again, accept that information or what they do with it and how they use it to better their development and learn. It's super impactful. And you see a lot of it too. There's a lot more North American coaches going to Europe as well to get some opportunity, get some growth, and see the game different perspectives and coach different styles. So there's a lot of moving parts there, but information is exchanging and different perspectives of the game are coming on both sides of the pond. So the game is expanding overall, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, especially with this draft year, I'm interested to see. I know that the World Junior Championships, I think they're going to try to play it in August. And then I think the plan is to have the following year be right when it's supposed to be. I'm interested to see how the next year's World Juniors turns out. If all of these European products, they're going to be the ones in the tournament unless they're in the NHL, but it'll be interesting to see. And I'm one of those guys that always sort of pulls for the underdog at World Juniors, right? Like I'm always wanting, you know, it used to be, I always wanted Switzerland and Germany to do well. Well, now they just do well, right? So it'd be interesting to see how the World Junior Tournament turns out with all these prospects coming through. And you see it, it used to be, you know, Canada, US, Canada. And then like you see Sweden getting in and Finland and Czech, and like they're all coming now. So it's one of my favorite tournaments to watch. I know from rewinding the fact when I was a kid, it used to just wake up and, you know, you're not going to school, it's Christmas break, so you're pumped as is, but you're like just glued to the TV to watch the new up and coming stars that will hopefully be in the NHL. But no, it's an interesting take on it. Let me ask as like the development guy now. So if you were to have a 18-year-old player and he could play in any European league for his own development, his goal is to obviously get to the NHL. Where is he going to go?
He would go to Sweden Super Elite U20. And that's where they do a very good job of development on ice, off ice. Their model is much different, much more patient, and it's from the ground up. And if he were to come there not in such great shape or not in Swedish shape, they would take the time to build that player up. And that's, that's what I like about it. You know, they don't take everybody in. You know, it's not easy to get in there. They have their own product, which they've developed. These kids are really going 11, 12 years old. They're really, I saw it in Skellefteå and in Modo, the way they develop their youth players. It's, you know, they take it seriously. Especially Skellefteå and Modo, it's small towns. There's not much else to do. Just like when I was a kid, I spent my whole life at the rink. So are these kids, and they're doing it kind of smartly. I did it just by, in Fulton, New York, the rink was six blocks away from my house. I went and shot pucks and got whatever piece of slab ice I could whenever it was free. They're doing it now more like with a model, you know, small area games and development and, you know, not crazy off ice training, but starting to get them in that mentality of, you know, the gym is part of it and nutrition. And then that's why you see like 16-year-old Swedish kids are more like 16-year-old Swedish men. They're 16 years old. They're living on their own. They're cooking on their own. They're literally living on their own, showing up to the rink every day on time, never showing up a mess, not making a mess of their apartment, all this stuff. They're much more mature and much more ready. Again, from being on both sides of it, I know that for a fact. I know, like, you give us a place to live on our own at 16, like, not to say that we burn it down, but like, probably not cooking for ourselves, probably be at Subway every day thinking we're eating healthy because it was a grilled chicken on a wheat bread. Like, that, it's much different. So Sweden would be the choice, and it is a lot of choice. The kids in Europe, I work with a bunch of kids like that, U17, U18, and their desire is to go to Sweden. So, but everybody's knocking on their door, and they have their own homegrown product. So you have to be kind of an elite level to get in there, and you got to be ready to take it seriously and take a stab at making it to either their professional team, which a lot of those teams, their youth programs come under, like Rogla is a top end team, very good in development. The Abbott brothers are there. They're Cornell grads. I played against them when they were for Luleå. They're doing a great job there, and it goes down. All the teams in the SHL have youth programs, and they're sort of developing all the way up from like U12 up and up to U20. And then hopefully they eventually either get drafted in the NHL or they're ready to play for their SHL team at 20 years old.
So for us that don't know over in North America, that model, like it are they now under contract with the elite league team, or do they become sort of free agents if you've been developed through, you know, would you say Skellefteå, or if you've been developed through that program, are you now automatically just the right of the property of that elite league team? Or
no, there's a youth level in there with that youth, you know, U20, U18 is how they go. And then, so after your U18 year, you'd have to like re-sign. It's obviously an amateur contract because NCAA is still an option for those kids. But then again, once you get to that U20 year, or if you make it before U18, you're ready to jump into the SHL. So they rip that up and give you a pro level contract, pay you accordingly, and that sort of thing. But you're not obligated. Okay. But what they do is invest in that player the best they can. Really, you're not using them. It's not a numbers game. It's they invest in those people, those kids. And then if they get to the point where, you know, if they're 17 years old, they want to go somewhere else, they're more than welcome to, you know, and they are technically usually sad to see them go, but you know, they don't hold back. And it's, Sweden's a great model because they, you know, they're backed by the government. So ice time is, you know, they don't have that big cost on their ice. They got a lot of free ice, a lot of time to develop the kids. And when you get there, you do get a lot of ice time. You can, you got your hour of practice time in some teams, some places you can have an extra hour or two individual ice time to do whatever you want. So it's pretty cool, but yeah, you don't, you're not obligated to be to that team. You can move around if need be.
Interesting. I just didn't know if it was sort of like, you know, so I think the soccer program, I think over in Europe is similar to that, right? Where it's like, you're with them for long periods of time. Just didn't know if that was the same for hockey, but switching back to the draft a little bit again, if you put your GM hat on, right? If you're a Colorado, you're a Tampa, you're a Florida, you know, a Toronto, like how do you gauge potentially offloading a pick to get a player that can help you now, right? Because every year guys get older and older and older, right? So you know, it's ebbs and flows in development and success, but at what cost do you think some of these teams that are, you know, in contention right now, which you would seem to be the top, you know, eight teams that are potentially odds makers, make them the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. Do you offload a couple of players and hope that you can scoop up some guys in trades, or what do you think? Or do you just go through it every year being like, you know what, these are our picks. We're taking players, building the foundation, and hopefully some of them come through.
It's such a tricky spot. You know, the market always changes and the drafts always change. Again, like there's the top two kids. I mean, there's a bunch of kids, Cooley's up there. There's a bunch of kind of similar type of players that are very good hockey players, but not generational players. So each draft is different and it's tough to say what point, you know, at this point, what's available in the draft and then what's your scouting staff doing. And this is something where I believe, you know, like a guy like Mark Hunter is unbelievable with, he sees all sorts of players with his own eyes and the people that he does have on board, he trusts them very well. And they've done a great job in London. He was doing a great job with Toronto, but knowing what's coming in the second layer, not just in 2022, what's in 2023, is there some good stuff out there? Some diamonds left in 2023 to give up for this year to add, you know, it kind of goes year to year. And again, is there generational talent in this? I hope I'm not eating my words or have to eat my words eventually, but my personally watching the highlights of these kids, I don't see a generational player. So I think this would be a draft where if you could give up some picks to get some players to help immediately, I would, if you're asking me to put a GM hat on, for sure. I don't see that in the market in this draft. So it really does go year to year. And then again, what is your scouting staff seeing in the next generation of players a year down the road and 2 years down the road, right? You'd want to see the 17-year-olds this year, and then the 16-year-olds kind of coming into whatever leagues they might be in, USHL, Ontario Provincial, OHL, what's that next crop for 23, 24 look like? So that kind of gives you that gauge of, can I unload now in this year to add for the pro, the NHL team, the big club, get a player for that, you know, immediate need. I think this year would be a good year to do it personally, but I'm not a season general manager. It's just an opinion, but in my mind, that's where I would be thinking, is if we needed an immediate need this year, I would be willing to give up draft picks to help the immediate big club.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought process because the players are sort of getting, I don't want to say pushed, they're earning their way into the NHL, but they're doing it at a quicker rate. Like you're getting an opportunity very early compared to, you know, how it sort of was where you play in the minors for a couple of years. And maybe that's a part of it being the veteran rule in the AHL they got rid of, right? So you're going to have a lot more younger players that you can select from, I guess, maybe, but it's interesting to see how, it'll be interesting to see tonight if there's any big movers or shakers in the draft as far as trades go, right? Like there's a lot of moving parts with the cap, and I understand all that, but if you're a team that deems yourself to be fairly close, like at what cost is a first rounder for you to acquire a certain player, and will a team do that, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, bring myself into it, I guess Edmonton could have really traded their 25 pick in 04 or something else, maybe immediately instead of using the pick. But Yeah, it doesn't always shake out too, you know. So the first round, whether, you know, it's first round, it's an honor to be drafted. First round's a big deal. You've earned that. It means at that moment in your career, you've risen to that top level. But for the future of a team, just because there's a first round slab on it, it doesn't mean it's, you know, again, it's going to be an earth shattering player for you. Again, there's going to be another pick in 23, another in 24. Each year, there's going to be a new one. So it'll be fun to watch. I'm excited for the draft today. My dad and I sat out back in the yard today, had a stogie to celebrate our draft day in 04, 18 years ago. So it's a great day. It's fun to watch. I love seeing all the action, and it's fun to watch on the floor, all the phone calls and that, this, that, and the other. I'll give you one last story. I mean, at my pick, when I got the 25th pick by Edmonton, they were chatting it up at the table. I don't know really what was going on at the table. They took a timeout even. They didn't know what they were going to do. So it was, again, waiting. Like, I think the timeout was 3 minutes extra additional or something like that, sitting there waiting. And then eventually they went up and Kevin Prendergast called my name. Edmonton Oilers select the 25th pick overall, Rob Shrimp. And then it was pretty cool. But the point being is, like, that the action at the tables is so much. It's so cool, you know, and it's calling, boom, cell phone, landline, you know, things moving around. And then, you know, Batman or whoever's up on the announcement board, we have an announcement, and then everyone's like, "Woo!" You know, it's like action. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited for the kids and all the kids that are getting drafted today and tomorrow. It's good luck. And, you know, the work just starts now. You know, it's not the end all be all if you don't get drafted. And it's also not the end all be all if you do get drafted, whether it's first round, second round, anywhere, the work just begins. And I could be the one of the first people to tell you that from firsthand knowledge and experience. It's not, the work's not done. It's just starting now. So good luck to all the draft picks going out today, and we'll be watching.
I'm with you. I went to a couple drafts with my dad just as a, you know, as I was in the NHL or under contract with teams, just as a spectator. And you're right, like the energy in the building, and to be able to see team, you know, you're just watching the floor and seeing a GM go over and talk to another table, and you're like, oh, maybe he's going to move up, and or ooh, maybe he wants this player. Like, it just the process that goes in your mind, thinking that there's going to be so much, and then eventually you do hear that we have a trade to announce, and everyone's like, oh, it's, I can't wait. But you know, I it was fun. Obviously for me, our draft was on the internet. I understand. It's a great time for families and players and anyone who has helped build the player, whether it's a minor hockey coach, a parent, a billet, development coach, skating coach, like high school teachers, elementary school teachers. There's a lot of people watching it, and especially being in Montreal, I'm sure they'll put on a pretty good show. So I'm with you, Trumpy. It was good hearing your stories, and I do wish the players the best of luck in the draft. I'll obviously be watching with you as well. And I'm glad I got a little bit closer to you in hole in ones. I still need to hit a lot more greens than you to catch up. But anyways, next week we'll touch on free agency, and we'll start to get into a little bit more on development and process that, you know, I think parents and players can take some knowledge from what we have to say on what potentially could help them get to the next level. But again, always good talking with you. Say hello to your family for me, and follow us on social media at Rob Shrimp, at Danny Sivret, or at the Shrimp and Sivret Show. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Shrimp and Sivret Show. Don't forget to subscribe to the Nation Network YouTube channel to watch all of our video breakdowns.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.